You're listening to the Obesity Revolution. We're adding fat to fat. You can join the revolution. Follow the conversation and Sean's weight loss journey at theobesityrevolution.com. Now, here's Sean Mulroney.
Welcome to the Obesity Revolution. I am Sean Mulroney. This is a podcast to help, you know, us deal with the stigmas and creating this awareness about obesity, and it's out there. But like I said, you find me on social media. I talk about this. All I'm doing is sharing my journey, and I just want to thank every one of you for following my journey thus far and what we're doing. And we have a revolution going on. You know, it went from my story to a movement to now a revolution, and it's helping people because there's a big demographic out there. And I know you that listen and the feedback you're given, and you know, we haven't had a voice, and when you get a voice, there's validation. And I just want to thank you for joining us. And of course, you know, today our podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Revolution. And you know, we really focus on four things. We want to identify the problem, of course. We want to educate. Education is where it's at, and that's why I think I put my story out there, is because the education factor has been, you know, not good, because nobody wants to listen or nobody wants to learn. And we need to look, listen, and learn, you know, about the problems that are out there. But you know, we're doing that, and we want to also inspire people. And you know, you don't have to be perfect to inspire other people. You just have to show people how you deal with your imperfections, and we want to execute. You know, it's one thing to know; it's another thing to put it, you know, the feet to it. And that's what we're wanting to do. And you know, we work with, you know, the obese community, people that are struggling. You know, we want to do that on a daily basis by, you know, providing resources, encouragement, and acceptance. And that's why we do this podcast. But see, obesity does not define you. And I'll say that till I turn blue in the face. It does not define you, nor will it ever define you. And you can't allow it to define you, because you are more than that. You are worth it. You mean everything to this life, to this world. And just because whatever your weight is, that doesn't make you who you are. And we want you to join our community, you know, on Facebook. We have a growing number. I mean, a big community that gets support and encouragement, and everything's always in the show notes. Like I said, you know, join our group. There's no judgment. There's nothing that's gonna, you know, set you back. And we're there for you. There's people that are sharing their story, and then also, why not just join our community, but go to the Obesity Revolution to join the revolution at theobesityrevolution.com. And we want you to be there. We care about you. And I'm excited. Thank you for all the reviews. Please leave a review for us. Tell us, you know, what you think. You know, send us an email. You can send that email and go to the BC Revolution. You can send stuff to us, and we are there for you. And don't let anybody ever tell you that you don't have support, because support is vital, and encouragement is vital, and accountability. So, anyways, Let's get into this. I can't believe it. We have an amazing doctor with us, that he studied both in India and in the USA on internal medicine, and is also board certified in obesity medicine. Okay. Now, it's amazing that we have doctors that, you know, doctors are dismissive and have been dismissive, but there's also doctors out there that are getting the job done. And I am so excited to have this doctor on here, Dr. Avishkar Sabharwal. Welcome to the Obesity Revolution. How you doing today, sir?
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your show. This is amazing.
Well, by the way, I'll just say, you are amazing. You what you're doing. I mean, especially everything's going to be all Dr. Sabarwal's stuff is going to be in the show notes, as well as his Decoding Obesity podcast. And I challenge everyone, you all need to listen to this. He has doctors on there that are dealing, you know, with food addiction, anything obesity centric. I mean, you are crushing it, Dr. Sabarwal. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you for those kind words. You know, really what I wanted to do was get this message out because, you know, I'll tell you about myself. I actually myself suffered from obesity, and I don't say I was obese. I say I suffered from obesity. Mm-hmm. My wording has changed. And that's all because I studied obesity medicine, really. I think, you know, the way I look at obesity is that, you know, it's a very complex disease. Mm-hmm. I, like, you know, everybody else around me used to think that it's more about just calories in, calories out. But and honestly, you know, I used to suffer from obesity. Now, I want to say something very critical over here. You know, when I say I used to suffer from obesity, I'm mm-hmm. acknowledging the fact that it's a disease, right? And this right. has been acknowledged by the World Health Organization as well, that obesity is a chronic disease. Just like high blood pressure, just like diabetes, it is a disease that we're dealing with. And it's very important to understand this because, you know, a lot of times when we talk about obesity, we kind of put the onus on the patient who's suffering from obesity, even as a lot of, you know, a lot of physicians do that. I, as a physician, used to do that because we have this very simplistic concept of, you know, calories in, calories out. And we just feel that the patient is the one who's controlling the calories that are going in. So, or the patient is taking in the calories, so the patient will be able to control the calories. But, you know, it just begs the question, if this were this simple, why would we have this epidemic? Now, I don't call it an Yes. epidemic. I call it a pandemic. Because I think it's this worldwide phenomenon that we've seen in the last 30, 40 years.
Sure.
That we've had this massive surge in the obesity rates. And, you know, that's the reason that's why I started this podcast. Because as I understood more about obesity and I understood what was going on within me, because as you had mentioned, I had done my training in two different countries. And actually, during my residency in both the countries, we were taught very little about obesity as a disease.
Wow. Okay. Well, let me say something real quick to that. That's a point that I, two things you got to. I'm sorry to just, I mean, it's just amazing what you've done and what you've accomplished. And you also, you know, with obesity and two things you said that I wanted to interject on is you said that everybody, the society puts it that, you know, why did me suffering with obesity and morbid obesity, people always say, well, why did you do that to yourself? I wouldn't let myself get that way. You know, go into that a little bit more that, sure. you know, everybody blames us. I mean, and not that I yeah. haven't done, you know, things to get there and eating and stuff, which we'll get into, yeah. but explain that a little bit further, Dr. Sabarwal.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because a lot of times when you look at social media, look at mass media, a lot of times the words that are used are not really appropriate, you know, words like glutton, words like sluggish, words like lazy
yes.
for people who are suffering from obesity. Really, you know, and it's funny because you'll find that, you know, some of the billionaires in the world, and I don't want to take names, and you can just Google, you'll find that they're suffering from obesity as well.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, it's so funny to see, like, these are high achieving people.
Yes.
And just, you know, you don't even want to look at billionaires. Look at physicians. I have so many colleagues who are suffering from obesity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, you know, and it's not just physicians, people in every walks of life. Even high-achieving individuals, they're suffering from obesity.
Wow.
If they have the composure and if they have, you know, they have found their way of finding success in their professional lives, you know, it begs the question again that why are they struggling with something like obesity if they can have that much of a willpower to, you know, do the right thing in their business? So is it really about willpower? And you know, and the second question is, did the willpower suddenly disappear from our genetics in the last 30 years? I mean,
yeah.
What right. changed in the last 30 years to make our willpower suddenly disappear? Like, what happened? You know, it's very surprising. And when you look at it from that perspective, you kind of realize that, you know, it's probably more than that. You know, there's much more to this. And if the fact is that people who are suffering from obesity, they're not there by choice. Nobody wants to be that no. weight, right? Nobody wants to be at a heavier weight. And I'm sure a lot of people have tried and they do not succeed. So, you know, if they've tried the same thing, if they've not succeeded, and trying again the same thing will obviously not work because it hasn't worked in the past, right?
That's right. And, you know, you saying all this, Dr. Sarwal, is amazing to me. Not that I'm looking, think, so I want to lose weight worse than anybody else wants me to lose weight.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I tried, you know, how many things, upteen times, and it's like, okay, you have all these different things. And obesity is complex. Am I right on that? I mean, it's not just like a simple...
It's way more complex. You know, it's funny when I get people asking me to talk about obesity. I'm like, okay, what aspect of... I'm coming from a very different perspective, and others are coming from a very different perspective of obesity. And when they ask about obesity, I'm like, what aspect of obesity do you want me to talk about? It's so much more than what you understand. And because I have that understanding now, I feel that, you know, there is a lot more to it, and it gives me a lot more respect for the disease itself.
Okay.
And it gives me a lot more respect, and it has changed my perspective in the way I look at, you know, the patients who are suffering from it. Because honestly, I suffered from it, and I don't want to say I suffered from it. I think I still suffer from it. I'm just controlling it, just like any other chronic disease.
Sure. And you had perceptions too. Not only that you suffered from it, but then just like everybody else, we all fell into that same vein that, wow, you got here. You know, I mean, if I heard it once, I heard I'm doing it wrong, or I'm not on my journey anymore. And, you know, it's about this. And if I had a penny for every time somebody made a suggestion or said something, I'd be rich.
Of course.
You know, it's everybody's an armchair quarterback. You know, it's like it's easy to say. But it's another thing that, you know, somebody gets the metabolism, you know, of, you know, a hummingbird. You know, I just have, you know, something going on.
Sure.
And not that it's an excuse, you know, it's more of an explanation. But then whenever a doctor like you, and, you know, you're also a member of the Obesity Medicine Association.
Correct.
So you know what you're talking about, to where we're seeing it, that, you know, we're doctors that are dismissive, and the doctors that listen to this from your perspective, it's not just one, you know, let's flip the switch on and then you're going to lose weight, eat less, move more, which that's all we've heard.
Yeah. And I think that's changing now, thankfully. So, you know, you're seeing more people, more doctors becoming more cognizant of the fact that it is a disease. And it needs to be treated as such. So I think it's changing. And that's what we're trying to do at the Obesity Medicine Association as well.
I love it.
Because, yeah, you know, it's something that we all need to learn about. It's not about dismissing something. If there's new information out there, or even if there's old information that's resurfacing, I'll be honest, there has been a lot of information that's been out there, but a lot of things change. You know, marketing change, industries change, so the social culture changes, everything changes with time, and sometimes you have to just go back and rediscover the old things. And I think that's also kind of what's happening now, that we're discovering all of this.
Wow. And you said something with calories, okay? Let's go beyond the calories.
Okay.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, I've been on my I changed my calories, you know, 9 years ago. I've been on every, you know, meal plan. So let's go beyond the calories, doctor. Tell us about that.
Okay. Sean, I'm going to break it into something very simple. I'm going to make it very, very simple for everybody to understand.
Okay.
Okay. What are calories, first of all? So calories are basically a measurement of heat. Okay. So what you do is you take anything and you burn it and you see how much of heat is produced from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's what calories are, essentially. So what we are doing is we are using it as an analogy to see how much of that. So heat is energy, right?
Yes.
So we're seeing how much of energy we're able to get from a food. Now, we're using calories as a surrogate for energy, right? The problem with that is that anything that you burn, anything that you can burn, will produce some heat, right? Or will produce some form of energy.
Yes.
But the big question is how much of it is actually utilized by your body? Because remember, if, for example, something has 100 calories, I take in something and I eat 100 calories, I'm going to be having my regular bowel movement the next day, right? What I'm going to be removing from my body also has calories, because that can be burnt, right? So there are some calories that are coming out also, right? And nobody takes that into account. It's not like what I'm eating is going to get absorbed 100%.
Right.
So that becomes a very big variable, because... nobody's measuring what's coming out. We're only measuring what's going in. So we don't know what's coming out. We don't know how much of those calories were absorbed or not absorbed, and what happened or what didn't happen. We don't know that. The other thing I want to point out is, you know, one of the things that's really gaining traction in obesity medicine is the gut microbiota. I don't know if you know about this, but we have more microbiome than we have humans. We have more bacteria in our body than we have human cells. So you know, they also need energy. So they're going to be using the same food that we're eating to get energy from it. And the way the gut microbiota modulates or it gets modified by the food we eat is also important. And so, you know, there are a lot of aspects to just simply looking at something as calories. Mm. And so it becomes much more complex than that. Because all of the products, but the chemicals that these bacteria produce are also important for your body. They also help modulate so many other functions in our body. And we're still on the brink, you know, we're still finding out what's happening with this microbiota when people are suffering from obesity. What can happen? Can we modulate it? Can we change things? We're still finding all of that out. So wow. Honestly, there's so much more to obesity than just, you know, calories in, calories out. I think, and that's something that we need to appreciate. Honestly, I did not know about all of this. And when I've learned, it just gives me a very deep respect for the science behind it and you know, a respect for the struggles of people who suffer from it.
Dr. Sabharwal, I'm going to tell you something. You're a man. That is so, man, I wish I would have known this, you know, a long time ago. I mean, you just laid it out there to where it's, you know, beyond that calories. And it sort of gives me comfort, because the fact is not that I want out of this,
right?
You know, I hate obesity and what it's done to me. And I always said, you know, man, there's more to it. There's more to it, you know. And, you know, everybody else, there's other people. It's just like, oh, well, you're not putting the work in. Well, I am putting the work. Whenever 650 million people worldwide, you know, are suffering from obesity, we do, like you said, it is a pandemic.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it's nobody
like,
wants to talk about it.
Did we just lose our will? Like, did these many people just suddenly decide to lose their will? Or what happened to do
wow.
something different about it? It doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't add
no,
up.
No, it doesn't.
Why would they suddenly decide that, you know, we don't have any more willpower for specifically for obesity, even though we can do everything else in the world, we can succeed in everything else. But as far as obesity goes, we don't have any willpower left.
Wow.
You know, that doesn't add up. That doesn't compute.
No, it doesn't make, well, you know, when I say it doesn't make sense, it's like me riding a tricycle. It
yeah.
doesn't make sense. You know, I ain't going to, or a unicycle. I ain't going to get on
yeah.
That's how bad it is. And you know, it's go, then how about this? How about, here's the other thing. And these are things I want to ask. And whenever I have a doctor like you, you know, and other doctors have listened and whatever that have been good friends. My Dr. Van Camp was the first mm-hmm. one that gave me my true medical workup, and I never had. Doctors wouldn't do it.
Sure.
And so the other thing is that how about weight plateaus?
Okay.
Can you explain, like everybody said, you know, I'm on this plateau,
sure.
whether it's a year, 6 months or whatever, or I just can't. I'm like, I'm going back. And
yeah.
if I get an infection from my cellulitis that I've had, you know, 20 times in 20 years, I can gain 65 pounds of water weight overnight.
Sure.
And then plateaus on top of that. So let's talk about that, weight plateaus and what's a plateau.
So, you know, it's interesting, Sean. I just want to point out something about the calories that we just talked about. That, you know, while I say that calories are calories, it's much more than calories in, calories out, but I think calories are still important to take
yes.
into consideration.
Sure.
So I don't want to dismiss calories completely.
Right.
But,
yes.
But that's
yes.
not the end of the, that's not the end of the story. There's a lot more that goes into it beyond the calories.
That's part of it. That's one part
yeah.
of it. Yes.
Yeah. So the next thing that you're talking about is the weight plateau. And you know, everybody who's tried to lose weight kind of goes through this, this phase of weight plateau. And you know, if you look at your weight trajectory, it's going to be interesting to see. You'll always see that when you try to lose weight, there's going to be a downward trend. And then there's going to be a nadir point where you'll hit, and then you'll have a slight weight gain back, and then it'll kind of stabilize if you've stabilized your weight. Now, what ends up happening is the body tries to defend the higher weight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem is, because the body feels that when you start losing weight, there is a hormonal, there are hormonal changes that take place in your body. Wow. And the body will try to do anything and everything possible to prevent more weight loss, because it just feels that it's in that flight or fight mode. It's in that mode where it's basically getting starved. And
what you're saying, so, it's almost like protecting you. Like the
correct.
If your body gets like accustomed to being
correct.
More. Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
So there's a tendency to protect the higher weight, not the lower weight, not mm-hmm. your ideal weight, but the higher weight. So if you're at a higher weight and then you say you lose, say 5 to 10% of your body weight, some of the hormones can decrease drastically in your body, causing you to, you know, have more, say, more hunger. They can, some of the hormones go up drastically, some of the hormones go down drastically. The ones that go down drastically are the hormones like leptin, and the ones that go up are like ghrelin, mm-hmm. Basically causing you to have increased hunger. So, you know, you have increased hunger, you have decreased satiety. That means even if you're eating the same food, you're not going to feel satiated as you would at the higher weight. And so there's a lot more that's actually going on with regards to, you know, the hormonal differences and the hormonal changes that are occurring in your body as you're losing weight. And that's why, and the reason for this is that the body is trying to defend that higher weight. So it wants you to be at that weight because it feels that that's the weight you should be at. Otherwise, it feels like it's going into that crisis mode. And that's why you hit the weight plateau, because after a certain point, you just cannot keep going down. It'll decrease the resting metabolic rate. It'll decrease the way you act. I mean, I'm sure people would have seen that once they start losing weight, they involuntarily will kind of try and avoid doing activities or becoming more active and this and that. And that's just the way your body is kind of acting mm-hmm. to prevent you from expending extra calories or extra energy.
Wow.
So, you know, that's what happens. And so it's very complex that you're seeing. And there's a lot of interesting science that's going into all of this to see what can we do about these hormone levels when they're going down. And, you know, and can we introduce these hormones again into the body at that point in time when you've lost a certain amount of weight? And will that help or not help? So there's a lot of study that's going on this also.
Man, this is just so exciting. I got chills listening to you. So going from that plateau, that you said something about hormones. What's the hormonal aspect of obesity then?
So, you know, so I don't know if your listeners know about this or not know about this, and I'm happy to share this. Our gut produces a lot of hormones. Okay. And okay. What I know is at least 9 or 10 of the hormones from the gut are involved in the complexities of our hunger, of our appetite, our food intake, and of course, you know, along with that, our obesity. But the big drivers really of fat storage, the big drivers that we call are insulin and cortisol. So insulin drives in basically from the sugar from your bloodstream, and it tries to store it into your fat cells. So that's why we see, you know, people who are having, say, type 2 diabetes, they have what we call insulin resistance, right?
Yes.
What you will see is that sometimes they'll usually have a heavier body habitus. If somebody who has diabetes and is started on insulin, they start gaining weight. And that's because the insulin is acting and doing its job. That just means that the insulin is working right, and it's just doing its job of kind of pushing the glucose into the storage phase. It's trying to get the blood the blood sugar out of the bloodstream, and it's kind of getting it stored into your fat. So you know, insulin is a big driver. Then of course cortisol. Cortisol also causes deposition of fat. We have a medical condition called Cushing syndrome, where there's increased cortisol levels, and it causes the similar kind of, you know, a body habitus where you have a lot of abdominal fat, central obesity that we see. And so these are the two big drivers. Now, as far as the hunger goes, you know, the hunger and the satiety and everything, what we see is ghrelin is like one of the big hormones that is produced by the stomach. So when you're feeling hungry, it's actually your ghrelin level is rising, and the signal goes to your brain to tell you that you're hungry and then you need to eat. But once you've had food, once you're satiated, the ghrelin levels come down, but the leptin levels go up.
Mm.
And interestingly, even though the insulin is acting as a fat storage hormone, the insulin itself also acts as a satiating hormone. So, you know, when you have insulin, you feel less hungry. So, the, you know, all of this. And so it's very complex. You know, it's too complex to kind of just put it into calories in, calories out.
And this is what decoding obesity is. That's what you're doing. I mean, you are just, I mean, this stuff is so good. I mean, this totally defies and demystifies, you know, and what you're doing is you're decoding, you know, obesity. And that's why this is just as good stuff. I mean,
and mind you, Sean, I didn't mention about, this is just the hormonal aspect of it. I didn't mention about the psychological aspect of obesity. I didn't even touch on that.
Let's talk about that then. Bring it up.
So, you know, it's interesting. I had a very healthy discussion with Dr. Eflin on my show about, you know, food addiction. She's a food addiction specialist. Now, I just want to lay it out there. Food addiction is not a recognized disease per se, but we do very well recognize the pathophysiology of what goes into, you know, into having these unconscious things that happen when we kind of see these what we call hyperpalatable foods.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the pathways that get activated are kind of similar to those pathways that are activated when you have any addiction for that matter, you know, whether it's cocaine, whether it's heroin, any addiction. It's basically the dopamine pathway. And I'm sure some of your listeners will be able to relate to this, that, you know, if you have, if you go to the supermarket, sometimes you just unconsciously go and grab that bag of chips, or you grab that bag of whatever, cookies or chocolate, and you don't even know, and you just get back and you realize that I just got this and I don't know why I got this. And that's what's happening is it's happening at a subconscious level. Your prefrontal cortex, that's the decision-making part of your brain, is not even getting activated. It's just happening beyond that. You just mechanically, you're just like a robot. Basically, you're just going, grabbing things and coming back, and you don't even know why you're doing that. And you know, that obviously contributes to a large extent to why we have this food addiction sort of a thing, and why we are consuming more of these things, which are not good for us. So that definitely plays a role in this too. And I mean, just saying that, you know, you can voluntarily control. Well, can you say that to somebody who's suffering from alcoholism?
Mm-mm.
That you can voluntarily just don't drink? You know, we don't say that, right? Or can you say that to somebody who's a smoker? Just don't smoke. We don't say that, right? So it's kind of similar to that you're saying that to a drug addict, saying just don't take drugs. Well, if they don't take drugs, they're going to get withdrawals, right? So you can't say that just don't eat. It's very simple to say that don't eat, but when it's happening involuntarily without your actual decision making part of the brain coming into play, then how do you control that?
Well, why is that? I mean, what not everybody has, you know, that, or whatever they sometimes, or is it like people say you can control it, or, you know, all these different things that people are talking about, that, you know, psychologically to where it is. I mean, the mind is terrible on this. I mean, I know this is that you put yourself in a different state, and even going back, you know, as you said, psychologically, how about even going back to where, you know, there has been some kind of, you know, traumatic experience happen, especially in my life, you know, Dr. Sarbawal, that, you know, I had, you know, sexual abuse, I had verbal abuse in my life, you know, at a young age, you know, left to my, you know, self in a lot of aspects and stuff. And that played a part. I had to talk about that all of that was part of the path, and then also led into psychological, you know, aspects. What about that, to where our environment and how we grow up and stuff like that? Is that, you know, something that plays a factor into it as well? What's your thoughts?
I absolutely believe that it does. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that does it, because, you know, honestly, our emotions and our psyche plays a huge part in what we eat, how we eat. Sometimes people just eat to kind of fill a certain void.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be eating because they're just enjoying the food, or they may not even know why they're enjoying the food. That might just be to fill that anxiety or that void that they're having.
And
it's, you know, it's very complex, really, to kind of just point a finger and say that this is what's happening. Of course, we have to sit down and unravel things. And there are certain, you know, disorders like psychiatric disorders, which are recognized. For example, binge eating disorder, nighttime eating syndrome. I mean, these are disorders which are well recognized, well characterized, defined disorders, which need treatment, which yes. There are medications. There's cognitive behavioral therapy. There are medications for these. So, you know, you can't just say that it's just your fault because, well, then what about people who are suffering from binge eating disorder? What about people who are suffering from nighttime eating syndrome? What about that? These are recognized disorders. These are like diseases that are recognized.
Man, I don't know what to say. I mean, this is like information that, I mean, is like a wealth of information in a power packed, you know, segment in this show. I mean, it's just like so much knowledge that you're, you know, throwing out there. And I mean, it's like, it's pure fire. I mean, you're dropping truth bombs and things that we need to know. And every listener out there, I mean, is going to get so much help. I mean, just by this, I mean, we need to do a podcast, like a 24-hour, you know.
No, that's why I started my podcast, Sean, so that I can, you know, put it into bits and pieces. And I've done a lot of podcast episodes on this. For example, I've had a podcast episode on binge eating disorder. I've done a podcast episode, and I brought a psychiatrist to actually talk about that. And I've had a podcast episode on calories in, calories out. So what I aim to do is because there's so much of information out there, I try to break it into bite-sized pieces of information that is easy to take home and easy to digest. And I try to leave people with something that they can work on. You know, it may not be something that they can do immediately at home. It's something that they may need to discuss with their provider.
Nice.
But at least they have something that they can start with. And that's what I'm trying to do, really, is, you know, get this information out there so that people understand that there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, we understand this, and what, as a community, we are very supportive. As a community of obesity specialists, we are very, very supportive to all our patients, and we try to get this disseminate this information as far and wide as possible. Mm. And that's what we do.
Tell us about that with the metabolism and metabolically. Explain that if you could.
So, we talk about metabolically healthy people who are metabolically healthy and have obesity. Like you had mentioned to me earlier that, you know, your numbers look great, and but you, here you are at, you know, whatever your weight is, but your numbers on your blood work look great. So, you know, there was this concept that came about that, well, if the numbers look great, do they really have a risk factor? Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that, you know, even if your numbers look great, but if you have obesity, that still is a risk factor, okay? And it doesn't mean that you may not develop it in the future. You still are at a risk of getting those metabolic diseases like diabetes, high blood pressure, increased risk of cardiovascular disease. All of that still exists, even if you have obesity. And that's what we are, you know, that's what the current understanding is of this disease.
Wow. And so, you know, going from there, now you said a little bit about food addiction, okay?
Right.
Now, what I really want you to do, can you really roll up the sleeves and give us some amazing, you know, things on this and go to where, you know, demystify this, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, these stigmas that are out there about addiction, you know, I know, it's like I always said I had a bad relationship with food. And so go into that. Give us a deep dive into food addiction.
Okay. So let's talk about, you know, food addiction. And I think I just want to make it simple for everybody. Let's just take the analogy of somebody who's suffering from, say, alcoholism or who's suffering from, nicotine addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see in those people? What are the characteristics that you will see in people who are suffering from nicotine addiction? So some of the things that you'll see are they're going to be having difficulty to cut back, even though they want to cut back, right?
Yes.
And I think that we see in a lot of people are suffering from obesity and are going for that bag of chips or whatever, that they don't want to eat it, but they're just going, and that's when I mentioned that, you know, that they just go and they're involuntarily buying it.
You want to fill a void, right?
Yeah, they're not able to cut back. There are cravings that occur. You're constantly thinking about that food. How many times has it happened? I mean, it happens to me all the time. You're just constantly thinking of, you know, well, I wish I had this right now. This would be so amazing, right? So those are cravings. Those happen to people who are suffering from, say, alcohol addiction or nicotine addiction. They crave for that nicotine. They crave for their alcohol. We see that. We know this. We talk about finding difficulty in having meaningful relationships with people because they're so preoccupied with all of this. Now, again, this is not their fault. It's the way the addictive pathway works, the way the addiction mechanism works. And it's really what ends up happening is that you're in this place where you're hooked onto something and it's involuntary, but people are trying to say, well, you can control it. Then the reason why this happens, I feel, is that because, you know, things like nicotine and things like alcohol are optional. So people realize that while this is optional, people, you know, this kind of separate from what you're doing, but food is not optional. Everybody has to eat. And so people just feel that, oh, well, you can just make the right choices. And I think that's where the problem comes is, well, it's not optional and you can choose what you eat. But then if you have this problem going on, how do you counteract that? And that's also part of the problem why it's very hard to define food addiction. And it's not a definition in the DSM-5 or whatever, because you don't know where to draw the line.
And you have to have food. You said that you don't have to have alcohol. You don't have to have nicotine,
right?
You know, or drugs, but food, you know what I mean? You got to have food.
You got to eat food, right?
And it goes back to, you know, no education about it, correct?
Right.
I mean, and here's the million-dollar question then, okay? here it is. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Is every obese person addicted to food or have a food addiction?
Thanks for listening to the Obesity Revolution. Now it's your time to join the revolution. You can follow Sean's weight loss journey and get coached by trainer extraordinaire Brandon Glore at theobesityrevolution.com.